bringing you everything under the Disney umbrella. Network 1901.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Lipstick and Lightsabers. I am one of your hosts, Shannon.
And I'm Alex.
And today we're doing another character spotlight, just like how we did for L337. But today we are covering Iden Versio from Battlefront 2 and the tie-in novel Inferno Squad. And we are super, super excited to talk about this. And I'm really excited because Alex has played the game, so she'll have a little bit more inside knowledge, I feel.
I don't know, maybe.
Maybe.
I think both of us really, really love Iden. And she's a character that maybe isn't as mainstream as some of the other characters. And we'd really, like, love to share with everyone more about her.
Oh, definitely. Well, and I feel like when Battlefront 2 came out, you know, like, EA gets, like, so much hate just, like, in general. And which is totally warranted. Like, I totally understand all of that. But Iden is a really cool character, and I really like what they did with that single-player story mode. And then to have Inferno Squad, which is set, like, way before, like, it's a prequel set way, like, it's the first Death Star, whereas Battlefront 2 is after the second Death Star. But it's written by Christy Golden, which, if you don't know, wrote Dark Disciple, which is an amazing book. And I went into Inferno Squad not having any knowledge of Battlefront or anything. I just knew that I liked Christy Golden and that Alex said Iden was cool. And this book broke me.
It's all the feels that you get from Rogue One, all the devastation and just like getting really attached to characters for them to
it's a huge, huge pain train. So we're gonna get into it. Obviously, be careful for spoilers if you haven't played the game or watched any of the walkthroughs, or if you haven't read the book, but we both highly recommend that you do. It's really easy actually to find just the cutscenes from the game on YouTube. Like you said, it was like, what, 2 hours if you watched
it
the whole thing?
It was just over 2 hours for the regular story mode, and then it was, what, 45 minutes for the DLC?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you want to look up, like, specific cutscenes, you can do that, too. Like, that's how I was doing it. I would look up just the Vardos one, and it was, like, 7 minutes and, like, that kind of stuff. But let's go ahead and get into a little bit of a summary from Inferno Squad. So would you like to provide?
Just read the text sleeve here. After the humiliating theft of the Death Star plans and the destruction of the battle station, the Empire is on the defensive. But not for long. In retaliation, the elite Imperial soldiers of Inferno Squad have been called in for the crucial mission of infiltrating and eliminating the partisans. The rebel faction, once led by notorious Republic freedom fighter Saw Gerrera. Following the death of their leader, the partisans have carried on his extremist legacy, determined to thwart the Empire, no matter the cost. Now Inferno Squad must prove their status as the best and take down the partisans from within. But the growing threat of being discovered in their enemy's midst turns an already dangerous operation into a do-or-die acid test. They dare not fail. To protect and preserve the Empire, what lengths will Inferno Squad go to, and how far beyond them?
I like, so Alex and I have two different versions of this book. She has the hardback, and I have the mass market paperback. And even just the back cover, the wording was just like a little bit different.
Oh, really?
Ours. Yeah.
Interesting.
Like that part with, wherever it calls them like the elite Imperial soldiers, like you had that higher up than mine does, like it was in a different paragraph. I don't know why they do things like that, but that's interesting.
This is like the inside sleeve of my book where it says that. And on the back it says, "The rebellion has hope. The Empire has Inferno Squad."
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. This book Honestly, okay, so we talked about Lost Stars, and Lost Stars is an absolutely amazing, amazing book, and I really, really love Lost Stars, but Inferno Squad is probably my favorite Star Wars book, and, like, it's so weird to say, because I don't know if I could ever, like, I have to be in, like, a very specific mindset to read it again, because it is so heavy. It's a really slow start for, like, the first 100 pages, just being introduced to Iden and Sen and Gideon and just everybody. But then as the story goes on and you really find out that it's about the characters and it's about getting in their heads, mm-hmm. and you see this dark side of the rebellion, you see them kind of waking up to, you know, there's bad things happening on both sides. And, like, you get to the end of this book and you see the devastation and the destruction and you really feel it. Like, I was legit sobbing at the end of this.
Yeah, I think I took a really long time to approach this book just because I think I audiobooked Battlefront in Twilight Company by Alexander Freed, and that was the kind of promotional book for the first Battlefront game. And that book was completely not my type of book. So I think I just held off on this one for so long just because I thought that's what it was going to be about. And it's completely not that style, like, at all.
Yeah, and I thought the same thing, too, because it's, you know, it's a novelized, well, it's not a novelization for the video game. That's mm-hmm. what I thought it was. And then when I found out it was a prequel, I'm like, well, it's still going to be, like, battles and whatever. But the fact that it was Christy Golden and she wrote Dark Disciple, which we both really like, I was like, okay, so this has to be pretty good. And it's so character focused. It is mm-hmm. about Inferno Squad. It's about getting in their heads. And what they're doing is they're infiltrating this group called the Dreamers. And they're so deep undercover that, like, their loyalties are kind of tested, because yeah. suddenly they're like, well, I'm really attached to these people, or I'm in love with these people. I've, you know, found some family here. But they still can't ignore the fact that they're spies for the Empire, and they are here yeah. to destroy them.
And they see their similarities between them, that they're not so different.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing of mm-hmm. all, is, like, they're really not that different.
I love all of, like, the Disney generation just pushing that there's basically, there's heroes on both sides, and there's bad on both sides, and there's a lot of gray area, and both sides are very similar in different ways.
Yeah, it is not cut and dry. It is not black and white. And I think we really, truly see that with Iden.
Mm-hmm.
So who is Iden Versio? Like, where is she at the beginning of this book? Like, what's going on?
So I think at the beginning, she's a TIE pilot. And then she gets promoted, like, pretty soon after. So she's the daughter of Legacy, very similar to our good boy Ben Solo. Her dad is an admiral in the ISB, and her mom is a propaganda artist for the Empire. And like Han and Leia, her parents split up while she's, I guess, relatively young. I mean, Ben still has his parents together, like, his whole childhood, but there's some big similarities there.
Yeah, there's so many parallels with Ben Solo with Iden. And I feel like with Iden, like, the main thing is that she has a lot to live up to. And whereas, like, with Ben Solo, we see him kind of, like, crumble under the weight of that. She is just striving to be what her father and her mother, mm-hmm. like, want her to be. And she's always in her dad's shadow. Like, that's the biggest thing that I got, like, from the game. But mm-hmm. you see it in this book, too. Like, she just wants to make him proud of her. She wants.
And there was never any nepotism. He never gave her any, like, head start over anything because she was his daughter. He treated her the same as he treated everyone else.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that really, I guess, developed her, like, as, like, a loyal Empire citizen is that her home planet, Vardos, really, really thrived under the Empire during that time. It was, like, the poster child for a planet that was run by the Empire.
Yeah, there's, what is it? Like, we're on this planet of Vardos, and it's so loyal to the Empire, and it becomes that symbol of loyalty. And the Versios kind of take in this tree. Like, what is it called? Like, the Shinya tree?
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a symbol to, like, the Versio family. It's a symbol of their devotion to the Empire. And this planet is known for these trees. It's covered in them. And I think it's really interesting that, like, Aiden reflects that these trees were quite literally good for nothing other than propaganda and looking pretty. But that small detail seemed to have escaped her father. They had become the symbol to Versio. And I think that right there is Aiden. Mm-hmm. Like, she wants to, like, overcome that because she wants to be, like, this amazing Imperial soldier. Just like her father, she wants him to be proud of her. But she kind of does become that symbol of propaganda because in this book, that's how her father uses her to, like, help infiltrate and go undercover. He uses her as, you know, like, this bright golden child of, like, a higher-up Imperial official.
Yeah, and, I mean, we really get to see that when he uses her face as he basically makes up this whole scheme that she deserted the Empire, and he puts her all over the news saying, no, she's a deserter, blah, 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 like, all this stuff. And, like, everyone knows who Aiden is at that point in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she was, like, a hero of, like, you know, she was a heroic TIE fighter pilot, mm-hmm. and she was injured after the first Death Star. And so that's kind of, they use that to their advantage. Like, she was becoming disillusioned. Like, yeah. That's how they kind of spin it, which is interesting because that's what happened in Lost Stars with Thane Kyrell.
But it was completely fake in this book.
It's completely yeah. faked in this book. But it does fool her mother. So Aiden doesn't really talk to her mother, Zihe, very much. But she still, you know, very much loves her and wants to make her proud. And there's this one scene where she's sitting under a Shinya tree, which I just want to point out that, like, they say that this tree looks like it's bleeding
and
because of
often,
the red leaves.
Isn't there often, like a pool, like a little, like,
mm-hmm.
pool under it?
Yeah, there's, like, a pool under it. Yeah. So it's very much a symbol of, like, the whole legend even with the tree is that a woman, Shinya, like, slashed her wrists because she wasn't allowed to marry the man that she loved, and she became the tree, and it's always bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
But she's sitting under this tree, and her mother, like, she's listening to this hollow from her, and she says, I will always be your mother. Whatever you do, whatever you say, I can't ever not love you, but I have lost my respect for you. And that just, when I read that, all of a sudden I was like, oh no, I'm in for it now. Like, the fact that her mother just sees Aiden and sees this, all that propaganda of her deserting the Empire and her being disillusioned and says, you know, I don't have any respect for you anymore. You've lost your honor. I still love you because you're my daughter, but that's it. Mm-hmm. Just, and, like, Aiden can't say anything.
And doesn't, and, like, Aiden, like, asks her dad to, like, be able to tell her. Because Aiden just can't stand to have disappointed her mom. Mm-hmm. She respects her mom so much that she just can't stand the idea that she thinks that, like, that her mom thinks that she's a deserter.
Yeah. Well, and that comes back later on, because at the very end of the book, Zihe does die, and Aiden is, like, struck for a minute because she thinks that her mom died thinking that her daughter was a traitor and that her daughter deserted her. But her father did finally come around and tell Zihe in the end, or at least that's what we're told. I don't mm-hmm. know.
I think that he did tell her.
I hope he did, yeah. Because Aiden loves him so much. And I do believe that he loves Aiden.
Yeah.
He's just he's not very emotional.
He's very
and he doesn't
by
show
the book.
His,
oh, he's a yeah. very by the book Imperial Security Bureau Admiral. Is that
yeah.
that's his title?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a very, like, you know, we see Ben Solo's family, and it's so hard in that family, and you know, it's hard for Han to, like, be emotional with the son, like, all this kind of stuff, mm-hmm. but man, like, Admiral Versio just, it's like, I don't know if you've ever seen Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, but he's just, like, that dad always expresses his love in fishing metaphors,
yeah,
and he's just like, I don't understand fishing metaphors, Dad. That's what it makes me think of. But let's get in a little bit to the mission in this book. So in Inferno Squad, basically we're seeing the beginnings of what is Inferno Squad. And it's like a covert team that's going to be working for Admiral Versio, trying to, I guess, uncover, like, rebel cells. In this one, they're infiltrating a group called the Dreamers, which is a spinoff. Like, they work with Saw Gerrera? No, because Saw Gerrera is already dead. It's a spinoff of Saw Gerrera.
Yeah, they were kind of like a faction of his extremists.
Yeah, and so we see this group come together. Like, we see the four members of Inferno Squad, and we see them working with the Dreamers. And what I really like is Aiden's relationship with the mentor kind of building up.
The mentor talks about Stila Guerrera a lot and about how she was, like, so perfect and the shining light, basically.
Yeah, I didn't catch it the first time I read this book because I hadn't watched any of Clone Wars, but the mentor is revealed at the very end of the book to be Lux, which just blows my mind. That doesn't really have anything to do with Aiden, but just, like, I have so many questions. I really like, with that whole side of the story, the mentor is training Aiden to, like, use her voice to speak up for the Dreamers, because they think that, you know, like, she's switched sides, and so not only did the Empire use her as propaganda, but now the Dreamers want to use her as propaganda to kind of speak out and be like, oh, well, if the Golden Child, Aiden Versio, can switch sides, anybody can. And they have a lot of scenes where they're in this kind of, like, amphitheater type of place, and Lux is just kind of telling her about, you know, like, using your voice and speaking up, and there's so much about hope in those scenes. They get really, really close, and at the end of the book, like, Aiden is about to kill the mentor, and he has this whole, like, amazing speech. And in my book, it starts on page 355, but he tells her, "There's always hope, Aiden. Hope that if you speak the truth long enough, the right person will hear it and know it to be truth." And then it skips down a little bit more and it says, "You can't quit hoping, Aiden. Cling to it like a lifeline, because it is. Hope that something you do or say will make a difference. Look at what happened with the Death Star. One man hoped for years, clutching an awesome, tremendous secret close to his heart, that somehow he'd be able to reach someone and let them know that abomination had a weakness. The rebels who stole the plans at Scarif died, but they hoped that they had transmitted the signal in time. Leia hoped the plans would reach the rebels. Hope, Aiden, it's at the root of everything we believe. Without it, we're nothing." Like, that is just, that's like the root of Star Wars, right? Oh, I love it. It's so good. Tell us a little bit about the relationship between the members of Inferno Squad. So we have Aiden, we have Gideon Hask, we have Del Miko.
And Sen.
Yeah.
So, Aiden's father gathers this group of four to become Inferno Squad. Two of the members, so Aiden and Hask, already know each other, and they've known each other for a really long time, and they have, like, hinted at maybe feelings for each other. Not necessarily, like, a romantic relationship yet, but, like, that there are feelings there, and that they're closer than just friends. And then the other two characters are newer, and they don't really know them as well. Del Miko is an older Imperial. Not much older, but I think they said maybe 10 years.
Yeah.
10 years older than Aiden.
And Star
Aiden,
Wars really likes that 10-year gap.
Yeah. They do. And then there's Sen, who is the youngest, and she's only 18. But she's very, very, very smart.
Yeah, she's probably the smartest one out of the group. Mm-hmm. And Sen was my favorite character in the book. I really liked Aiden, but, like, Sen's story.
Yeah.
Ouch.
She really falls in with the partisans.
Yeah, she really does. And I do want to say, I read this, so Alex played the game and then read the book, and I read the book and then watched the game, and so I really shipped Aiden and Gideon.
and you're texting me,
like, so not into it,
and I'm like, really? I guess that's because I consumed it in the opposite order I was supposed to.
Yeah, because we find out, so, like, at the end of the book, you find out that, like, Gideon is a through-and-through Imperial, because they all get really close to the Dreamers. Like, even Gideon does. But at the end of the book, Gideon kills every single one of them. And he has no remorse for it, because that was their mission. That's where they're supposed to be. And so that's a little bit scary. But and like an Aiden is very angry with him and telling him, you know, we're not the dreamers, we're supposed to be better than them, and because she thinks that, you know, this kind of mindless killing, like, that's not who the Empire is supposed to be. So she really believes that the Empire is like a force for good, kind of like with Sianna. So that's when we get our first little glimpse that Gideon isn't who he's supposed to be. And then you get to the game and you're like, oh, no, don't like Gideon.
I always, like, from the first page, I was like, oh, I love Delvigo.
Well, that's so funny because, like, I thought he was, like, he's so soft because he really falls in with, like, one of the older members of the Dreamers. And he just wants to save him.
The Chadra fan, just, right?
Yeah. Which is what, Orca?
Orca.
I can't remember. Yeah, that's what he is in Resistance. And so, like, I thought that was so cute, but, like, I never really thought a whole lot about him because I was so sure that there was going to be a romance with Gideon and Aiden. So I was, like, really focused on it, and I was, like, totally wrong. But I think that's really interesting that you see this from Aiden, like, you know, that Imperial officers are supposed to be better. And I was rewatching part of Battlefront this morning, this is skipping forward a little bit, but it was when they're at, like, the attack on Vardos, and Gideon, I want to say that Gideon turns traitor, but he doesn't. It's more that Aiden and Del turn traitor because they want to save civilians, and they had specific orders not to.
Yeah.
And she says that, like, that's what the Empire's supposed to do. It's supposed to save civilians from tragedies like what's happening on Vardos, not just blindly following orders. And Gideon says, well, this is a new Empire.
Yeah.
And that's so fascinating because, like, the Empire that we see definitely isn't the Empire that Aiden is talking about. But, like, Aiden and Del are such good people deep down, but, like, the Empire does such horrible things.
I think it's really similar to Sianna, where she sees the Empire change in the same way, where you see her see that new Empire that Hask mentioned, and that's when she starts doubting it.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, I like that it's the second Death Star that I think really does it for a lot of people.
Yeah, and Project Cinder.
Yeah, it's like, if the second Death Star didn't make you doubt the Empire, then Project Cinder 100% does. So Project Cinder is part of Palpatine's contingency plan, and he actually sends out all of these, like, weird robotic messengers that tell them to initiate Project Cinder. And this is just, like, it's just a destruction of worlds. They phrase it as, like, a cleansing of any sort of resistance. And they talk about it more in Alphabet Squadron about, like, why they're doing it and everything.
Well, they want to self-destruct, basically, because Palpatine feels like they're a failure, so there's no point in continuing the fight. Because then he kind of is like, okay, let the rebels win for now because of this contingency plan. And so, guys, if you're very excited for The Rise of Skywalker, I think the Battlefront, like, the book and then the game, is a really interesting, like, piece of media that you guys need to consume to kind of dig deep into how is Palpatine puppeting everything behind the scenes for The Rise of Skywalker.
Well, and even, like, tying in with that Alphabet Squadron, which, it's just, we're getting this really cool look at this part of the timeline. So, like, what's going on with Project Cinder? This is the beginning of not necessarily the beginning of Palpatine's contingency, but you're really seeing that, like, he's been planning things for a really long time. And then when we get to the DLC, there's something called Project Resurrection, which is, you know, playing into, like, Finn and all this kind of stuff. So it's so cool to see that, like, all of these pieces have been there.
And we haven't, like, really considered them.
Well, like, they talked about, I remember the last D23 is when they unveiled Battlefront 2, because I was at that gaming panel, and so, like, they came out and they were talking about it, and it was so cool, and, like, you know, this has been planned for so long. It's great. I love it. But, like, Aiden seeing that mindless destruction, that's when it finally just flips for her that, like, she can't be part of this empire anymore. And what I think is really interesting is that, like, she still loves her planet. She still loves her mother. She still loves her father. But she just can't stand by and let innocent people die. And she's always been like that. Because even when she was with the Dreamers, like, she had to tell herself, you know, like, these are terrorists. And that's exactly what, like, Aiden and Thane tell themselves, too. Or not Aiden and Thane. Sienna and Thane tell themselves, like, these people are terrorists. But, you know, when she gets close to them, she kind of realizes, you know, like, you know, these are just people like you and me. Like, Disney really is humanizing both sides of the conflict here.
I think Aiden is very level-headed. And that's one of her really, really good strengths that she has. That she's able to take a gray, kind of like a step back and assess the situation and make a decision based off of what she thinks rather than who she's loyal to.
Yeah, she really takes in all the facts first. And, like, I like that about her because she follows orders, but she doesn't, like, blindly follow orders. She takes it in, and then she kind of, like, thinks it over for herself, and she takes in all of the other information and everything that she needs to know and makes her own decisions. Yeah.
And I think and, like, that's something that Sienna doesn't do.
No, yeah, because Sienna does just blindly follow the Empire because she believes that it has to be good. That's really fascinating, though. And I'm really interested to look at that with Erica that we get introduced to in Inferno Squad, or not Inferno Squad, in Alphabet Squadron, because I think these three women have very similar stories. Yeah. We have to see a little bit more about Erica, and we're talking a lot about Alphabet Squadron because we both just read it. We might talk about it, but she's not done yet. we need more. We need more before
so
we
far,
can really...
So far, it's been a bit of a...
A struggle? It's struggle. A struggle. It's a struggle. It's not...
Inferno Squad. Like, I really like Erica, but the battles... Oh, man.
They're bad. They're bad.
They're putting
the way asleep. The way I figured it out is that, like, if you really like... If you want that, like, angst in that character, you're gonna get it in both books, but you're gonna get more of it in Inferno Squad and more battles in Alphabet Squadron. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like whatever your poison is. And for both of us, I think we're both more of an Inferno Squad type of person.
And I think that maybe that could change in terms of, like, us enjoying the story based off of where the second and third book go in the Alphabet Squad trilogy. I think, like, because the Aftermath trilogy is neither one of our favorites, but I think we both kind of enjoyed the second one. Like,
Blackjet's pretty good, but, like, at the same time, I never liked really any of the characters that were introduced in Alpha and in Aftermath. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna get them all mixed up, but the story got better. But I can say by the end of Alphabet Squadron, I did like I liked more of the characters than I thought I was going to. But I want to get more into Battlefront 2. So is there anything else you want to talk about with Inferno Squad before we just move straight into the game? I think the only thing we didn't mention was that the Versios don't cry.
Yeah.
I love that. I feel like that just really speaks to Aiden's character of how she just holds all of it in.
Well, I think it's the whole Versios don't cry quote, I think resonates in Star Wars a lot because so much of Star Wars is tied to emotions, emoting and not emoting, especially with the Jedi, like, and the Sith, and burying those emotions, and we see it a lot in the sequel trilogy with the heroine's journey and everything. So I think that is, it's very pointed that they went that route with, like, how the family dynamics were.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that is a very sympathetic experience that, like, a lot of women can identify with.
Mm-hmm.
You see this with Leia, too. It's like Leia really isn't allowed to mourn. She has to be this strong leader because if she crumbles, everything crumbles. And a lot of women are always accused of being emotional and being ruled by emotions. And so, like, Aiden growing up and having this told to her over and over and over, you know, like, Versios don't cry. And so her growing up and then, like, seeing all of this injustice and feeling all this pain and feeling a lot of really conflicted emotions for everything that she went through with the Dreamers, she has to just hold it all back.
Yeah.
Like, she can't let any of that show.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that really amazes me with how early Inferno Squad takes place compared to when she finally leaves the Empire in Battlefront 2. Like, and, so much time
and passes. There's a lot that you don't see, like, the Battle of Hoth. Like, we don't really know what she's doing so much during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I was going to say about the whole Versio's Don't Cry thing is that it does come back around to the game, and we do eventually see her tear up over something.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the game. So in Battlefront 2, you're playing as Iden Versio right when, like, they're on Endor and the Death Star blows up. And it's them preparing Project Cinder. It's that what happens during that. It's Iden leaving the Empire. It goes, like, all the way to the Battle of Jakku and then, like, a little bit farther.
Yeah, and then the DLC goes into the future, into the sequel trilogy timeline.
Yeah, it's very much... I really like that the DLC uses the destruction of the Hosnian system to, like, cement you in, like, this is where you're at in the timeline, just like Resistance does, which is great. I love it, and it's really sad. But I like what you said here. So, like, when they're on Endor, Iden tells her team to keep moving and to grieve later, because they're trying to escape. And I think that comes back to, you know, her always being told, like, Versios, don't cry. You have to keep moving forward. And, like, again, that's something that Leia has to deal with. I always think about, you know, they've really given that a lot of thought to how she doesn't really react to the destruction of Alderaan. And that's because she couldn't. Like, she had to just keep going.
Yeah.
And you have to deal with it later.
So there's these Palpatine messengers that showed up just after the destruction of Endor. The Death Star 2. And they're really creepy looking. They're these, I guess, like, red droid type of things that have these screen heads. I don't know if you guys know. So at Disney World, there's a Frozen ride, and they have these animatronics of Anna and Elsa, and the whole body is an animatronic. But then their faces are just screens.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me of the Palpatine screen head. And so he had a message for Garrick Versio saying, now we are doing Operation Cinder, basically. Like, follow the contingency plan. Iden comes in, and she gets to see this message from the creepy Palpatine messenger. And she's kind of like... well, how could we do this? This is Vardos. This is our homeworld. We can't do that to the citizens. They're loyal to the Empire. And her dad is completely just shut off from that and is like, no, we have to follow Operation Cinder. It's what Palpatine, like, has ordered. And she kind of fights back and is like, well, I'm not going to take orders from a dead man.
That is truly... something really, really interesting. And we were talking about this earlier, and you said that looking at it this way and seeing all of these people who do take orders from Palpatine still, that also comes back in Alphabet Squadron. Like, the First Order is 100% a product of Palpatine's contingency. And as much as, you know, people may think that Kylo Ren will be the supreme leader, he is not going to be in control.
Kylo's 100% not going to be in control, because I think people like, is it Admiral Pride?
Yeah, Allegiant General.
Allegiant General Pride, who is played by Richard E. Grant. I believe he is going to be very similar to Garrick Versio, and he's going to be following that contingency plan to the T, and isn't necessarily loyal to the First Order, but more loyal to the contingency plan.
Mm-hmm. That'll be interesting, too, with Hux, because I feel like Hux is very loyal to the First Order.
To the First Order, yeah.
So that'll, I think that's going to be a really interesting dynamic,
Sure. Because we see in Battlefront, Garrick is very loyal to the contingency plan, but Iden is loyal to the Empire, to the ideals of the Empire. So when she sees that they're going to destroy her homeworld, she's like, well, that's not the ideal of the Empire. What are you doing?
Exactly. Yeah. And, like, Vardos isn't the only planet that's targeted. They target, like, so many planets. Even Naboo. Yeah. There's Bespin, one that they mention in Alphabet Squadron. I can't remember the name of it. But, this is happening everywhere. But the fact that it's their homeworld, and, like, we said, you know, Vardos has always been a symbol of loyalty to the Empire. Like, that's what was always used. Like, we got the Versios from this planet. You know, Zihei was a propaganda artist from this planet. Mm-hmm. So the fact that it's being targeted and Inferno Squad is specifically being told not to spare any civilians, like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, well, they went after all the planets that were the most loyal, because they went after Naboo, Palpatine's home planet. They wanted to bury the Empire so that this contingency can rise from the ashes of that.
There's so much there, and there's so much still that we need, like, details. But I really love that Aiden, you know, like, when she hears this, she goes to her father, and she's not happy, but they go forward with the mission. They're supposed to save this one person named Gleb. And she's down there. And when she sees these civilians and she sees these people struggling, she realizes that, like, she can't leave them. And that's where we get that turn where it's like her and Del decide that they're going to help these people escape. And Gideon says that they're traitors. And he tells Admiral Versio. And they basically are, like, running for their lives because now everybody is after them. But after that, she goes, like, she doesn't have anywhere to go, so she goes to the Rebellion.
Yeah.
And, oh, there was one line before
we get to the Rebellion. Yeah, I found it interesting that they were worried that if they turned themselves into the Rebellion, they would go to their prison. Mm-hmm. And that, like, they were like, oh, maybe we should just run away instead. Because they were worried that the Rebellion wouldn't listen to them.
Yeah, well, and that's what Sienna deals with, too. Mm-hmm. You know, she's like, I can't go to the Rebellion because they're going to kill me and they're going to lock me up. That's something that we see Yerrika Quell deal with, where she's like, I don't know what's going to happen to me. I'm with the Rebellion now, like, that kind of thing. So that's really fascinating because we find out a little bit more about, like, the state of the Rebellion and, like, what is happening there and, like, kind of how they need people. But I wanted to bring this up where you found that the Palpatine messenger says, resistance, rebellion, defiance. These are concepts that cannot be allowed to persist. And I love it. I love that quote so
basically much. he's destroying the Empire so that the rebels can't do any of those. There's no one to defy against. There's no one to rebel against.
Yeah. And what happens? They become complacent, the New Republic. Mm-hmm. They become so complacent, they don't even have a military. They have a navy, but they're not for, you know, anything to, like, fight, because they don't have anything to fight.
It's so insane to think that Palpatine had this contingency. He planned for that to happen, that they were going to become complacent.
And they just played right into it.
Like, they always do. Like the Republic did.
Yep, the Republic did too. Palpatine is still controlling the Republic. He's still the Phantom Menace. oh my god. But that comes up because Gideon tells Aiden that defiance will be the death of her. And I just think, I like that because Aiden does live for a pretty long time, because she doesn't die until we're well into the sequel trilogy timeline. Right after Hosnian. And it's interesting because, you know, she joined the Rebellion, but in those moments, like, we find out that she didn't join the Resistance. She didn't join the Resistance until she's, like, almost about to die. And that's really fascinating to me. So she becomes, like, a Rebellion hero. She fights in the Battle of Jakku. Her and Del, like, fall in love, and they have a family, and they have a daughter. We don't really know a whole lot about, like, her choices, but I kind of respect that she wanted to stay with her family. Like, her duty was to her family and her daughter, rather than jumping right back into a fight. Because that's what we see in Aftermath, right? with
And it also makes me wonder, like, people like Harrison Dua, like, what she's doing around that time. She hasn't, she hasn't been mentioned in Resistance.
She
was going to be mentioned that she was part of the Resistance, I would think I would hear it, but maybe we'll still hear her, about her in, like, season three or something.
I think it has to come up. Like, if she's still alive, like, we have to know where she, and I feel like we're going to hear from Jason at some point. Because it's like, you know, she becomes a general, and she keeps fighting with the Rebellion, but that's because, like, at the very early days of the New Republic, it's like you kind of had to just do anything you can to, like, keep it afloat. And so, like, once everything calms down, it's like, why would you want to jump back into the fight? It almost adds more context to, like, Bloodline and seeing how, like, people didn't want to believe that the First Order was rising because they didn't want to jump back into another fight. Yeah. They had become complacent. They believed that they were safe. And Leia jumps right back into it again. She has a family too, though.
Well, and there's also what Lando mentions in Battlefront in the game. When Aiden and Delmico surrender themselves to the Rebellion, Lando and Triv are the ones who come, like, talk to them. And Lando basically gives them two options. You can go live your life, like, go have, like, a good life, go leave all of this behind, or you can help us on Naboo. So I think that both of them had that idea that after they helped the Rebellion, that they would go take that other option that Lando gave them to go live happily somewhere.
Which I like that they got to do, because that really brings up, so, like, Aiden is, like, fully redeemed. She was with the Empire from day one.
She's done a lot of bad things.
She's done so many bad things. She was a highly decorated Imperial officer. She doesn't change sides until Operation Cinder, which is, like, after the Rebels have already won.
And it's the New Republic now.
Yeah, it's the New Republic now. And the New Republic is like, you know what? We need fighters. And if you're here to fight for us and you have changed sides, we trust you. We believe you. We believe in second chances. And she's allowed to live a life. She's allowed to go off and be happy and get married and have a daughter. And that is, like,
pure Star Wars.
Pure Star Wars, yes. That, like, everybody deserves a second chance. And, like, everybody, you know, if you make that change for yourself, like, you deserve to try to get to
have
live your life.
Second, like, have that second chance.
Yeah, 100%. So,
Aiden has Kylo done Ren very, yeah, I was, like, we were talking about this earlier. Aiden has done as atrocious things as Kylo Ren. The difference is we saw Kylo Ren kill his own father, who, as an audience, we have a huge attachment to Han Solo. He's a legacy character. We all love him. That's the big main difference, I would say.
Well, and even beyond the fact that he kills a legacy character, Aiden chooses to save her father, which is really fascinating. So, like, during the Battle of Jakku, that becomes, like, Aiden's personal thing, is, like, I can't kill my father. I can't let him die. And so she goes to try to, like, reason with him, to try to get him to come back, because at this point, you know, she's pretty sure that, like, something, you know, obviously he's going to have to go to prison or something, because he's an admiral, but, like, he doesn't have to die. And I like that quote that you pulled where she says, I'm finishing what we started. I'm going to get my dad.
Yeah. And that scene where she's trying to save her dad really reminds me of the scene where Thane goes to save Sianna. But the big difference is Thane, like, forces her off of that ship without, like, her choice, where Aiden respects his choice to go down with the ship.
Yeah, because it's kind of that same thing. And I wonder in that moment if Admiral Versio was kind of in that same headspace as Sianna, where it's like, I'm so deep in this now.
Oh, 100%, because he was, I don't have a quote pulled up, but he was telling her that to go live and go to survive, because she was making the right choices, basically.
Yeah, it's so amazing. And it's the fact that, you know, like, Aiden and Thane both believed that, like, you know, I know you're still here and I know you're still going to die for this cause, but there's still hope for you. Like, that's amazing. That's awesome. So moving into the DLC, this takes place, like we said, the destruction of Hosnian Prime happens during this game. And there's a lot of really amazing quotes in this DLC.
Well, and we also get to see the relationship Aiden has with her daughter. It opens up with them just flying through, like, asteroids or meteors, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's cute to see that relationship.
Yeah, and she gets pulled back into the fight because Delmico, who's, like, her husband and, like, the father of her child, Zay, is murdered because he was doing some stuff for Laura Santeca, some Force interesting things.
He was a good friend with Laura. It, like, mm-hmm. I think there's some things that we're going to see interesting with Laura coming up in the next month or so with the Galaxy's Edge books and then... Like, all the...
We're speculating, but we know.
It's a rise of Skywalker, especially with the Force Collector. With that book, I think that there's potential for Delmico to be either name-dropped or have a small cameo in any of those.
Mm. Yeah, he has a really interesting story, because he meets Luke Skywalker, and Yeah, they have some interesting conversations about faith, especially in the Force. And he's not a Force user, but I like how that really changes him. He's a very interesting character. He's very self-reflective and introspective, which is really awesome in a male character. But that's what drags Aiden back into the fight. And it kind of drags her daughter along with her. And what they're doing is they're trying to figure out, you know, like, who killed Del, and, like, what's happening, and it takes them all the way back to Vardos. We see the scars of Operation Cinder. They end up infiltrating a Star Destroyer to get information for the Resistance after they see the destruction of Hosnian Prime, and all of this results in Aiden finally getting revenge on Gideon Hask, and killing him, but she dies in the process as well, and kind of passes the torch onto her daughter. And I think it's really fascinating that we revisit Vardos all these years later with the new generation. So, like, with Zay. And Aiden even says that, like, she didn't want her to come with them, like, into the Citadel or wherever they're going, because she didn't... She's like, it's one thing to know the past and, like, to know all of the things that I'd done. It's another thing to have to stare it in the face. And I feel like we'll feel that in the sequel trilogy too.
It's about facing your past.
Yep, because you can't kill it.
Can't kill it.
You have to face it. Mm-hmm. Aiden's death is so interesting because she dies protecting her daughter, and mm-hmm. she dies trying to get vital information to the Resistance. And Leia says that she was a complicated woman, but the galaxy was far better with her in it. And, like, that's that hope where, like, you know, if all those years ago when she joined the Rebellion, they had said, you're too far gone, you know, you don't deserve to be here, we're going to kill you, mm-hmm. or you're going to prison, there's so much that wouldn't have happened. There's so many amazing things that, like, wouldn't have happened. So, like, she had a very complicated past. She was a very complicated individual, but she did so much good.
And I don't think Naboo would have survived the way it did if not for her. But another interesting thing that Aiden says as she's dying is, we fight so that others can live, and if we die, it better be for the same reason.
That really speaks to who Aiden is, and that kind of puts things in perspectives that we see, like the decisions that she makes in Battlefront, like when she's young and in Inferno Squad. Like, you know, everything she does, she's doing it to save more people. So, like, she's in the Empire because she believes that the Empire is going mm-hmm. to save people. Like, it's the right thing.
Yeah.
So when other people start dying, she's like, this isn't right.
Yeah, and she literally deserts the Empire for that reason.
Mm-hmm. And so I think, like, her loyalty is to her own beliefs, and her beliefs are that, you know, like, we're fighting to save people. Yeah. Like, yeah, we're protecting people. So that's why when the Empire betrays her beliefs, she leaves them. Whereas Sianna is very similar, except she is loyal to the institution to a fault.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she is unable to leave.
I think maybe if Aiden left the New Republic after everything was done and went to have a really normal life with her family, I would probably think she's pretty cut off from all the political stuff that Leia is very in tune with. So maybe she didn't necessarily know so much that things were going down.
Which I can definitely believe. Mm-hmm. And if she wasn't that in, like, she wasn't that in the know, then her duty would be to protecting her family.
Yeah.
And so, like, with her, like, being unsure if, like, joining the fight is the right thing to do, of course she's not going to, because she's like, well, I'm going to stay and help my family, mm-hmm. like, until you can convince me that, like, I need to, you know, this is going to save my family, I'm not going to join you. But then she sees the destruction of Hosnian and knows that, like, the resistance is the right place to be.
Yeah.
So the end of this game leaves off with, like, a really big, like, passing of the torch to her daughter, Zay Versio. I don't believe we've seen her anywhere else. She was...
Wasn't there a mention of her in... Someone said something in the Last Jedi novelization?
Yeah, I was looking at her on Wikipedia. So she's... they don't mention her by name, but they insinuate it. So the plans that they got in this DLC was how to take down a dreadnought. And Zay gives those plans to Leia. And that's how Poe is able to take down the dreadnought at the beginning mm-hmm. of The Last Jedi. And at the end of the DLC, Leia sends Zay off to find their allies in the Outer Rim. And, like, she is Inferno Squad now. So I think we're going to see that come back. I'm wondering if maybe yeah. we could see that in Resistance, like with Kaz, because she's mm-hmm. Kaz's age.
And she's with Trib right now, too, so we would see him, I think, also.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, maybe that's where we're going to find Lando. Maybe we're going to meet up with Hondo there. I just feel like she's definitely going to come back. And I'm very interested in learning more about her, because we don't get to see a whole lot of, like, Aiden and her together other in mm-hmm. this DLC, which, like, it's great. But since it's a video game, you can't really get into, like, yeah. the meatiness of, like, what's going on with the characters and all that kind
of
stuff.
I think that she's inherited the best of both of her parents.
I think so, too. And I really, I'm excited to see more of that for, like, definitely, for sure.
So, Lucasfilm, you're probably not listening, but please, more Zay content.
Please, more Zay content. I want it. I need it. It's great. All right, so let's get into our listener questions. So this week on Twitter, we asked you guys what you love about Aiden Versio and what you think of her story. So Alex, what did they tell us?
Okay, so we got some really great messages. And the first one we got was a little thread from our friend Sarah, and her Twitter handle is @SarahSahim. She said, Aiden's redemption arc wasn't as fleshed out as I would have liked it to be, but I blame that on Battlefront 2 story mode being complementary as opposed to the main focus. Aiden is defined by her fierce loyalty and dedication to the little guy, even when she was serving the Empire. We were talking about that, about how dedicated she is to helping people. It was never to uphold Palpatine's thirst for power. I adore how her pragmatic battle style and efficiency is woven into the gameplay, showing that her commander rank really was earned, as opposed to the nepotistic reward for her father's rank. Coughs, hucks. Aiden brought out the good in those around her, and perhaps the most fascinating repercussion from this was her father's acknowledgement of her strength. Perhaps she inherited more from the Admiral than we think. Lastly, as a woman of half-Indian origin, her presence was mind-blowing to me. She was permitted to be more than an exotic piece of eye candy. Aiden is a nuanced and complicated hero who's cognizant of her emotions. We never see that.
Yeah, it's just so great. I love... I agree that she's not as fleshed out as she could be, but that's where yeah. I feel like the book really helps.
Yeah.
Because it's so nuanced in the book.
Mm-hmm. But I think she's right that it's because of how short the campaign is.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's already, like, you can get super fleshed out characters, an amazing story in video games. It is 100% possible. Mm-hmm. But, like, Battlefront and EA is not the place we're really going to find that.
Yeah. But you know what? I'm hoping that Fallen Order will be more of that, because it is only a story
yeah,
campaign.
It's only that.
Yeah. Yep.
So our next one is from Swara. So at Suara's Seawalker. Yeah. I've never actually read his at before. So he said, I feel like Aiden was the first time I was able to see myself portrayed positively as a protagonist in Star Wars. I love her fierce dedication, her resourcefulness, ability, story, her redemptive arc, and more. She's here now for all the other brown kids. Hashtag SW Rep Matters. And he posted this awesome picture with him and the voice actress. And I agree, like, it is so important to have her as a protagonist, and it's such a shame that we already know that, you know, like, she's dead in the sequel timeline, but there's hope for Zay,
you know,
hopefully.
She could be in Mandalorian.
She totally could
be. She could.
She totally could be.
And like, because Aiden is completely based off of her looks, it's easy. Just get the actress. Yeah.
Yeah. Just get well, and like that actress, like, she is so, she loves Aiden so much. Mm-hmm. Like, she would so, I know she would so be up for it.
Yeah. And she reads the audiobook for Battlefront, and she did a really, really good job doing it.
That's so awesome.
Okay. So the next one is from Sarah Haas, and she said, I love Aiden. She is strong as heck, and when she realizes the atrocities of the Empire, she's committed to goodness. At the same time, she doesn't give up on the people around her and fights for them too. Also, Janina Gavin Carr is a true queen whose positive energy makes the world better.
Yes. All right. I think our last one that wasn't like a response to something else.
Timothy, I think.
Yeah, it's from Timothy. So he said, I like the character, and I am without a doubt feeling very selfish as a consumer, but her arc in the game campaign was too short and rushed, but I'm going to read Inferno Squad soon, and I hope that that book does for her the same Rebel Rising did for Jen. And it 100% does. It really does flesh her out. I want more. I would love a sequel to Inferno Squad. I'd love to see them go on another mission, but I don't know if I could, because it's just so painful.
Well, there's that whole gap of, like, what they're doing during Hoth.
There's fears. So many gaps in her timeline. Like, there's so... I agree with you. I think we're going to see more about Del. And I could see them going into, like, what he's doing a lot. Mm-hmm. But I hope that we also get to see Aiden. I hope that she's not just, like, doing whatever and just, like, raising her daughter. Which, like, if that's... If so, like, that's fine. I want to see that relationship. But I want to see it. I don't want to just, like, hear of it or see it in the background.
I think that the most likely way we're going to see it is through Delmico.
Yeah, definitely. Because he might be part of the Gatherers, which is going to be interesting. but I think that's it for the listener questions. So now we're going to go into Little Bebos. And Alex, for those of us joining us for the first time, what are Little Bebos?
So Little Bebos are... just tiny things that we liked about whatever we're talking about. It can be, like, an idea, a concept, or just a character, like, a side character you like, maybe outfits, whatever.
My Little Bebo isn't necessarily about Aiden, but it is from Battlefront. Or no, it's from Inferno Squad, and it's the bioluminescent cave. So the Dreamers are camped out on this planet that half of the planet is always at night and half of the planet is always during the day. Like, that's just how the rotation works.
And no, isn't it like constantly just kind of twilight?
Isn't it?
And there's like an hour. I thought there was like an hour each day that was maybe a little brighter.
Maybe. I know it's like super dark on this planet. It's like the embodiment of the balance.
It's like it's like Pandora at night.
Yeah, it's all, everything's bioluminescent, but like Sin and, how do you say his name? Sayori? Sayori?
Sator, I don't know.
Something like that. They go to this bioluminescent cave, and it's like there are stars underground, and it's so beautiful. And that was the scene where I'm like, great, now one of them is gonna die. And it just gets really angsty, and I like it. I live for the angst, I can't help it.
Yeah.
What's your Little Bebo?
Okay, so there's this scene in the game. It's during the Battle of Jakku, and Aiden goes out to go try to get her dad, and she has this nice little, like, back and forth with Delmico, where he says, like, you know, like, come back, make sure you come back. And she says, make sure that, like the ship doesn't go down. And they have this, like, cute little, like, flirty back and forth. And then Shriv is like, what about me? Doesn't your friendship mean anything to you? And then, like, they're just ignoring him.
Aww. Well, they're in love. Their kiss is really great.
Yeah.
I will say. Like, after the Battle of Jakku. Yeah.
And then Shriv walks over and is like,
it's so great. I love it. Star Wars. JJ, I hope you're taking notes.
I think it's too late for that.
Well, he better have been taking notes.
Yeah, we always say that, like, JJ, please. And then in my head, I'm like, wait, it's way too late for any of that.
I don't know. Every time I think that, I just keep thinking of him and Rian Johnson giggling together, and then him just thinking, I got you, fam. Hopefully he's got us. But then that's going to wrap it up for our discussion of Aiden Versio. And she is one of our Tragic Empire girls. And the more... We have a lot of Tragic Empire girls now, because we've got Sienna, we've got Aiden, we've got Erica, we've got Tam. And I think it's really interesting that Disney keeps telling this story, like, over and over. And Ben Solo is also one of them, even though he's not a girl.
Effo boy.
Yes, he is.
I don't want to call him an Effo boy. He's not really an Effo boy.
Well, he's not a Sith either. He's just a sad boy. He's just an emo boy. That's all he is. He's just crying.
Oh. Speaking of good boys, who was a good boy this week?
Oh my god. So, Alex and I saw Spider-Man. And we are now Tom Holland's stan accounts. Do you have any thirst for Tom Holland? You can just send it our way. It's greatly appreciated. I just want Tom to be in Star Wars.
You should start a campaign.
Yeah, let's start a campaign. I want him to play Thane Kyrell, and Zendaya could play Sienna. That'd be great.
Yeah, I'm okay with Thane being shorter than described. It's okay.
Oh, yeah, he is supposed to be really tall, isn't he? I forgot about that. He's supposed to be a big boy. Well, you know, it's fine. Oh, you know, it can't be lipstick and lightsabers if we don't go on some kind of weird thirst tangent. But that is going to wrap it up for this episode. If you guys have any little bebos about Aiden, we would really love to know. And if there's anything in particular that you're interested in hearing us talk about, you can also write in and let us know, because we're always looking for ideas. You can always reach out to us at lip_lightsabers, or I'm at McCarter Shannon and Alex is at Alex Leonis. You can also email us at lipsticklightsabers1901@gmail.com. Next time, we're hoping to have some news from San Diego Comic-Con.
Well, about books, at least. About Mandalorian or The Rise of Skywalker, but it looks like there's going to be a publishing panel.
Yeah, so we're really looking forward to that. And last time we were waiting for news to drop so we could do an episode, we were not Boo Boo the Fool. So... Hopefully our good luck will not run out. If not, we will talk about Alphabet Squadron. If for some reason that gets pushed, we'll probably talk about it eventually. As always, thank you to everybody who is a patron for Network 1901. That is our umbrella channel here. But we will see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.